Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really zeroing in on something critical. It's this potential risk Jeff Bernard flags in his paper.
Yeah.
The risk to the U.S. and, well, the global economy because of current international policy. And it all seems to hang on the dollar, its role as the world reserve currency, this global asset status.
It's definitely a vital conversation. We're talking about the core vulnerabilities, really, in our interconnected financial system. So our goal today is to unpack Bernard's analysis, pull out the key insights, and look at some related sources to give you a clear picture of these potential fault lines, but hopefully without making it too complex.
Yeah, we want to give you that essential knowledge, get you up to speed quickly and thoroughly. So we'll be digging into Bernard's paper, Debt Crisis and the Dollar, obviously. But also touching on Jacob Goldstein's ideas about what money even is from money, the true story of a made-up thing.
That's a fascinating one.
Isn't it? And then there's Aaron James and Robert Hockett's Money from Nothing, which raises some interesting possibilities about money creation. Plus, we'll look at fiscal policy, global trade, and bring in folks like Kenneth Rogoff and Brent Johnson's dollar milkshake theory.
Quite a mix. Okay, so where do we start? Maybe with the foundation, the dollar's current. What's it called? The exorbitant privilege.
Yes, let's start there.
Okay, so Jeff Bernard points out, for nearly 80 years now, the U.S. dollar's been the world's main reserve currency. This wasn't an accident, right? It came out of the Bretton Woods Conference back in 44.
Right after the war.
Exactly. And this set up a whole global financial structure, basically, that's given the U.S. some pretty big economic advantages for decades. Advantages that, you know, Bernard suggests might be at risk now because of certain policies.
Okay, so what are these advantages specifically? What does Bernard highlight?
Well, first off, the U.S. has been able to run these persistent deficit, trade deficits and budget deficits. Why? Because there's just this huge global demand for dollars.
People need them.
Countries need them for reserves, for international trade. So this demand just soaks up a lot of the dollars the U.S. pumps out through its deficits. It's like having a built-in global market for your IOUs, basically.
Huh. So this constant global hunger for dollars lets the U.S. carry debt that might otherwise be, well, unsustainable.
That's a big part of it, yeah. And second, this demand for dollars specifically for U.S. Treasury bonds means the U.S. government can borrow money more cheaply.
Lower interest rates.
Exactly. Lower rates than they'd probably get otherwise.
Uh-huh.
Bernard calculates this saves U.S. taxpayers billions every year. That's a direct financial perk of the dollar's global status.
Okay, so cheaper government borrowing. What else does this privilege get the U.S.?
Well, American companies get a leg up in international trade. They can often buy and sell stuff using dollars.
Ah, so no currency exchange hassles for them.
Right. It cuts down their transaction costs, and they don't have to worry so much about exchange rates moving against them. The foreign company usually deals with that risk instead.
And I think you mentioned the U.S. gets more freedom in managing its own economy.
That's the final piece, really, that global demand acts like a buffer. It gives the Federal Reserve more leeway in setting monetary policy interest rates, mainly without immediately panicking about the currency crashing. Other countries don't usually have that kind of flexibility. It's a position of, well, considerable power.
Okay, makes sense. But Bernard's whole point is, what happens if that foundation starts to wobble, right? He outlined some pretty serious potential fallout if the dollar loses that top spot. Let's talk about the twin deficits crisis he mentions.
Right. So take away that artificial support from being the reserve currency, and suddenly those ongoing budget and trade deficits look, well, unsustainable. Foreign countries just wouldn't need to hold so many dollars anymore.
And if demand drops.
Then you could see some major and probably pretty painful adjustments here in the U.S.
Painful how? What kind of adjustments?
Bernard talks about the possibility of forced fiscal austerity. Basically, if it costs the government a lot more to borrow money, they'd face tough choices, like deep budget cuts to popular programs or significant tax hikes, maybe both. Imagine slashing spending or raising taxes just to keep up with the interest payments on the national debt.
Oof. Yeah, it doesn't sound great. What about the trade deficit side?
That would likely need a painful adjustment, too.
Right.
The U.S. would probably have to shrink its trade deficit somehow.
Meaning
maybe consuming less because imports would get way more expensive. Also trying to export more, and likely the dollar itself would weaken quite a bit, which again makes anything imported much pricier for Americans.
So the cost of everyday stuff could jump significantly, which links right into Bernard's next point. sharply higher interest rates.
Yeah, exactly. If global demand for U.S. Treasury bonds falls off, the government would probably have to offer much higher interest rates to convince people to lend them money.
And that would ripple outwards.
Oh, definitely. First, the cost of servicing the huge federal debt would shoot up. That could create a kind of vicious cycle. Higher debt payments mean bigger deficits, which could mean even higher interest rates needed.
And it wouldn't just be the government facing higher borrowing costs, right?
No, absolutely not. Those higher rates would spread through the whole economy. Businesses would find it more expensive to invest and grow. Buying a house, buying a car, all that gets tougher for individuals. Consumer spending generally could take a hit. Bernard warns this could easily tip the economy into a severe recession, especially hurting industries that rely heavily on borrowing.
And then there's inflation. A weaker dollar making imports more expensive? Sounds like a recipe for trouble.
It really does. The U.S. imports a lot of consumer goods, so if the dollar drops significantly, you'd see prices rise for all sorts of everyday items. That eats away at everyone's purchasing power. Bernard even worries about wage price spirals.
Where prices go up, so workers demand higher wages, which pushes prices up again.
Exactly that loop. And it puts the Federal Reserve in a terrible bind.
Yeah, what could they even do?
Well, do they fight inflation by hiking interest rates even more, risking an even deeper recession? Or do they try to support the struggling economy, potentially letting inflation get totally out of control? Neither option is good.
Bernard also mentions financial market turbulence. Sounds like things could get chaotic.
Yeah, the shift away from the dollar probably wouldn't be smooth. You'd likely see a lot more volatility, instability. Bond markets could get jumpy as yields adjust.
Stock market too.
Probably declines in the stock market, yeah, as higher rates bite into company profits and valuations. Banks could come under stress if asset values fall and their own funding costs rise. And there's a real risk of capital flight international investors pulling their money out of dollar assets. That would be a big concern.
And beyond the pure economics, Bernard says the U.S. could lose geopolitical clout. The dollar's power isn't just financial.
That's a key point. Losing reserve status could mean the U.S. has less ability to use sanctions effectively against other countries.
Because countries wouldn't need dollars as much.
Right. It could also mean less influence over global financial institutions like the IMF or World Bank, and maybe even constraints on military spending if borrowing gets too expensive and budgets are squeezed.
And what about the wealth effect? Many Americans have seen asset values rise. Could that go into reverse?
Yes, that's another risk. Falling asset prices, houses, stocks combined with higher borrowing costs would likely shrink household and business wealth quite a bit. Plus, Americans would find their money doesn't buy as much internationally.
Lastly, Bernard mentions more competition for crucial resources. If oil, say, stops being priced mainly in dollars,
then the U.S. might find itself competing more intensely for things like energy and raw materials, potentially paying higher prices. If oil pricing shifts away from the dollar, energy costs could definitely rise. And global supply chains might become more fragile as all these economic ties get renegotiated.
Wow. Okay, so the picture Bernard paints if the dollar loses its status is pretty grim. But he does talk about how it might happen gradually versus suddenly. That seems like a really important difference.
Oh, huge difference. A gradual shift, maybe towards a world with multiple reserve currencies, would still likely involve some pain, but it might allow for adaptation.
How so?
Well, the Fed and Treasury might be able to manage a slower, more controlled depreciation of the dollar. Fiscal changes, those budget cuts or tax hikes, could maybe be phased in over time. You might even see a silver lining, like U.S. manufacturing and exports becoming more competitive as the dollar weakens.
Okay, so gradual is tough, but manageable, perhaps.
Yeah.
But a sudden change. A dollar crisis, he calls it.
That sounds much worse.
Much, much worse. Far more destructive. If confidence in the dollar just collapses suddenly, you could see outright panic in financial markets. A massive rush for the exits capital flight.
What would policymakers do then?
They might have to slam on the brakes with emergency interest rate hikes just to try and stop the bleeding, try to stabilize the dollar. But doing that would almost certainly cause a very sharp, very deep recession. Bernard even raises the possibility of serious political instability in that kind of scenario. He does mention historical examples, like when the British pound lost its top spot, or the dollar troubles in the 70s. But he says we shouldn't rely too much on those comparisons.
Right. They offer lessons, for sure, but the world is just different now. Global debt levels are way higher today. The financial system is much more interconnected, more complex. Geopolitics are different. So while history gives us clues, it's not a perfect roadmap for what might happen this time.
This whole discussion really brings up a basic question, doesn't it? What is money, fundamentally? And why the dollar? Jacob Goldstein's book, Money, The True Story of a Made-Up Thing, tackles this head-on.
Yeah, Goldstein's perspective is great. He basically argues money is a shared fiction, right? It's a social construct. It only works because we all collectively agree to believe it has value.
From seashells to gold coins to just digital entries.
Exactly. He traces that whole evolution. And the key takeaway is that the dollar's value isn't intrinsic. It's based purely on ongoing global trust and agreement that it's stable, useful, reliable.
Which is maybe why you see phrases like, "In God we trust," on the currency itself. Alongside Federal Reserve note, which kind of implies it's an IOU, a debt instrument, it really highlights that trust element.
It absolutely does. And this idea of money being sort of created and how that relates to government spending is pushed even further in Money from Nothing by Aaron James and Robert Hockett.
Right. That book makes some pretty bold claims challenging the traditional view, like the Fed being able to create money out of thin air.
Yes. They argue that, technically speaking, government spending doesn't absolutely require tax revenue first in the way we usually think about it.
Because the government, through the central bank, can create the money it needs.
That's the core idea. And they suggest this power could be used for big things, funding a Green New Deal, maybe universal basic income, direct payments. They even point to the COVID stimulus checks, the CARES Act, as a kind of real-world example of this principle in action. It definitely makes you rethink the perceived limits of monetary policy.
Okay, so while some are exploring these, let's say, less conventional ideas about money creation, we still have to grapple with the more standard concerns about fiscal policy, trade, and how those impact the dollar standing globally.
Absolutely. And there are real concerns there right now. For instance, the talk about potentially renewing and even expanding the Trump-era tax cuts without finding ways to cut spending elsewhere.
That adds to the debt, right?
Significantly, according to projections. We're talking potentially trillions more added to the national debt over the next decade. Many economists worry that puts more strain on our long-term fiscal health and could eventually erode that global confidence in the dollar we were talking about.
And rising debt itself is a vulnerability, as Bernard also suggested, even separate from the reserve currency issue.
Definitely. Higher debt means higher interest payments down the road, which can crowd out spending on other things the government needs to do, infrastructure, education, defense, you name it. Plus, things like imposing more tariffs, risking trade disputes, or a global slowdown. Kenneth Rogoff has warned that sort of thing could also chip away at the dollar's role in global trade.
It really feels like all these pieces, fiscal choices, trade policy, debt levels, the global economy, they're all tangled together and could all push the dollar one way or another.
They're absolutely interconnected. Think about how the U.S. uses the dollar for sanctions. It's a powerful foreign policy tool, no doubt.
Wow.
But it also gives other countries a strong incentive to find ways around the dollar, doesn't it? To reduce their dependence. We're already seeing efforts, maybe small scale for now, but things like the EU trying to set up special channels for trade with Iran or India doing similar things. It points towards a slow, maybe but steady push towards a more multipolar financial world.
Kenneth Rogoff's historical view seems really useful here, thinking about these potential shifts.
Yeah, Rogoff, in his work, like the video, Our Dollar, Your Problem, he really stresses that the dollar getting to the top and staying there wasn't some historical inevitability.
It depended on things.
It depended on U.S. economic strength, yeah, but also on smart policy choices and just the global circumstances at the time. He looks at the competition the dollar has faced over the years, the ruble, the yen, the euro, now maybe the renminbi, even crypto.
Right.
And he basically cautions that future challenges could come from other currencies rising or from new technologies disrupting the system. His big thing is taking that long-term view to understand these big economic currents.
Which kind of leads us, maybe surprisingly, to Brent Johnson's dollar milkshake theory. It suggests the dollar might actually get stronger in a crisis, which seems counterintuitive given all the U.S. debt issues.
It does seem paradoxical, doesn't it? But Johnson's theory, which Nick Wright explains well, argues that despite America's own economic headaches, global financial crises could actually boost the dollar.
How does that work?
Well, there's still huge underlying demand for dollars.
Huh.
Think about it. The U.S. economy itself generates demand. There's a massive amount of debt around the world that's denominated in dollars and needs to be paid back in dollars.
Ah, so people need to get their hands on dollars to pay those debts.
Exactly. Plus, in times of global panic, the dollar is still seen by many as a safe haven, a place to park money. So all these factors can combine to drive up demand for dollars, especially when things get scary elsewhere.
So a global crisis hits. Everyone scrambles for dollars, pushing the dollar's value up, potentially creating that upward dollar death spiral he talks about,
mm-hmm.
where the stronger dollar makes it even harder for others to repay their dollar debts.
That's the potential dynamic, yes. The surge in demand strengthens the dollar, which makes dollar debts more burdensome for foreign borrowers, which could actually worsen the global financial instability. It's a really fascinating, if somewhat unsettling, theory to consider.
Okay, so let's circle back to Jeff Bernard's main conclusion. If current policies continue to put the dollar's reserve status at risk, the U.S. economy is facing a pretty fundamental shakeup.
That's his bottom line. He argues the U.S. would likely have to shift gears dramatically. Move away from an economy driven so much by consumption enabled by that exorbitant privilege, and pivot towards one based more on domestic production, boosting exports, and crucially, getting its fiscal house in order.
And he thinks that transition would be tough.
He suggests it would almost certainly be painful, yeah. It could mean a slower growth path for the U.S. economy overall, and would require some major political adjustments and potentially difficult choices about spending and taxes.
He makes the point that this privilege has sort of allowed us to live maybe a bit beyond our productive means, and losing it forces a kind of reality check.
A potentially jarring realignment, yes. And ultimately, Bernard's position is that protecting the dollar's reserve currency status, even if it's not always stated explicitly, is, or at least should be, a core goal of American policy, precisely to avoid these potentially severe economic consequences down the road.
Right. So wrapping up this deep dive, we've covered a lot of ground. The major risks Jeff Bernard sees for the dollar's reserve role, thanks to current international policy. The whole idea of what money is and the role of trust, thanks to Jacob Goldstein.
Those alternative views on money creation from James and Hockett.
Yeah, and the undeniable impact of fiscal decisions, trade policies, the challenges popping up to the dollar's dominance.
And then that curveball from Brent Johnson, the dollar milkshake theory, suggesting the dollar might strengthen in a crisis. It's definitely a complex picture with lots of moving parts, all centered on the dollar's massive role in the global economy.
It really highlights just how much rests on the dollar's position and how various policies and global trends could either shore it up or, well, start to chip away at it. The stakes for the U.S. and the world seem pretty high.
They certainly do. It's a delicate balance.
Okay, so lots to chew on there. Here's something for you to think about after we wrap up. Considering all these different forces, Bernard's warnings, the nature of money, policy choices, global shifts, even the milkshake theory, what single factor do you believe will be the most decisive in shaping the dollar's global role over the next decade or so? And maybe more practically, what steps, if any, should individuals or even nations be thinking about now to navigate these potential changes? That's your final thought for today. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.